on the Fight Nerd Radio.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Danny the Upgrade Lovenstar, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
This is Martin Cannon. You're watching the FightNerd.com. This is Nathan Africa Tour, and you just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
See it? What is it?
The game we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York. You're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and today is October 1st, 2009. We are hours after the biggest fight in the Ultimate Fighter show history, Kimbo Slice versus Roy Big Country Nelson. We've got a lot to talk about besides that huge fight, including Strikeforce Challengers, which was last weekend. And later in the show, we're going to also speak with Quentin Chong, who is the Muay Thai coach of Extreme Couture in Las Vegas, and Howard Davis Jr., who is the boxing director at the American Top Team and a former Olympian as well. So let's get right into things. First off, I want to thank my sponsors, and they are HoodlumFightGear.com, FindMMAGym.com, BrawlAndMall.tv, and the Mixed Martial Arts World Expo at MMAWorldExpo.com. So let's get right into things. Kimbo Slice, Roy Nelson, spoiler alert, if you have not seen the show yet, pause it right here, skip ahead about a minute, don't listen anymore. Otherwise, if you're still listening, here we go. Big Country Roy Nelson wins the fight by stoppage in round two by crucifying Kimbo's arm and dropping some shots on his head. With Kimbo unable to defend himself, Herb Dean was forced to stop the fight. Nelson had dominated Kimbo for the majority of the fight, taking him down in round one and also crucifying there too, looking for the same stoppage, but unfortunately for him, the round ran out. Nelson exposed Kimbo's continual weakness on the ground, but still, Kimbo was accepting of his defeat and pretty humble in the end, so kudos to the Ultimate Fighter editors for showing Kimbo as more of a human and making us feel more sympathetic for him as being a fighter that was thrust into the spotlight, wasn't necessarily ready for it, and he even kind of admits it in this episode that he wasn't necessarily ready for that limelight in Elite XC, and here he is now just trying to kind of gain more respect and learn more about himself as a fighter. As for Nelson, he was walking around like the Burger King at the end of that fight, and Dana White, as you saw, was not too pleased with that, but it is still a huge win over a pretty big name, experience or not, so we're going to have to give him that. Is this the end of Kimbo? Well, who really knows? I mean, already next week they're still pushing Kimbo to reclaim the limelight on the show, but we will soon see really what's up, and it could just be, you know, a ploy from the Ultimate Fighter editors to make sure we continue watching even though Kimbo has lost, just kind of giving us that hope that he just might come back. Now, Justin Wren did kind of hint at the possibility in our Ultimate Fighter blog last week that Kimbo could be back, so we will see what happens there. And speaking of the tough blog we're doing, the next edition of the Tough Times with Zach Jensen and Justin Wren should be on the site Thursday afternoon on thefightnerd.com, so make sure to come back and check for that soon. Now, I do want to talk a little bit more about the end to the Kimbo Slice fight. There's, for me, I don't know how much of a win it really was. I mean, it was a weak finish for the most part. I think a lot of people will agree with that. Kimbo was not out, but he wasn't really defending himself. I mean, there was no chance he was going to be out from those kinds of shots, but at that point, Kimbo was just eating punches, and he wasn't doing anything. His legs were dead on the mat. Nelson was continuing to pummel him. Eventually, he would have hit him. So, I don't know. I'm still a little confused over the ending, but nonetheless, it's over, and bigger things and better things for Kimbo probably in the near future. So, Strikeforce Challengers was this past weekend, and I'm not going to lie, I completely forgot about the show last week, which is why I didn't give any predictions about it. I knew it was coming, I just forgot it was that weekend. Can you blame me? Strikeforce Challenger shows are pretty much solid, for the most part. They just lack name power, especially when you consider that this show is headlined by Tim Kennedy. Now, speaking of Tim Kennedy, he was dominant against replacement Zach Cummings. Originally, Kennedy was set to fight Evangelista Cyborg, but Cyborg had injured his leg, so Cummings came in and spent about 90% of the first round on his back being wailed on by Kennedy, and then got caught in a north-south choke in the early minutes of round two for the finish. We didn't really learn much here about Kennedy as a fighter, since Cummings was a replacement, not last minute, nor not as last minute as we've seen in other fights, but still not that much notice, and he's really not on the same level at all as Kennedy is. I am hopeful we will see Cyborg take on Kennedy soon, and see where it leads him in his career, since he is a big contender, but at this point I'm not sure how far he can go. There's potential, but what can he do against competition that is a bit higher up in the food chain? Cyborg would have been a good test for that, and then above that, we would have continued to go on and see maybe what Kennedy can do next. Otherwise, he's kind of stuck at you know, to use a pro wrestling reference, at mid-card level right now, and we have to see if he can take himself to that next level to compete with the big boys. Also on the show, Daniel Cormier took a victory over Gary Frazier, both making their MMA debuts and both decorated athletes in their own rights. Cormier showed a lot of control and poise in this fight, not rushing in, being patient, and looking pretty good in his debut overall, working from many different angles. He still has a lot to work on, that said, but he's got very good potential, and he looked excellent against Frazier. Also, note of Frazier, Frazier was pretty much unafraid to engage in the beginning and took Cormier head-on, and that's something to applaud as well. But in the end, Cormier dominated, taking over once Frazier slipped after a knee, and getting ground and pounded until the fight was stopped. So I'm sure we're going to see more Cormier. Is he going to be a top-level contender? Well, hard to say at this point. He showed a lot of potential, as we said. But we will soon see what he can do after this fight. You know, Gary Frazier was looking for this opportunity as well. Cormier took advantage of this. He won the fight. And we'll see what happens, really. That's all I can say right now. There's not much more to talk about with this. So let's move on to Ray Sefo, former K-1 kickboxing fighter, who made his mixed martial arts debut as well on the card against Kevin Jordan, a Memphis State University football player. Now, what happens when you put a football player in the ring with a K-1 legend with the highest knockout ratio in all of K-1, according to Mauro Ranallo? Surprisingly, a pretty good back-and-forth match, and not the beating I expected it to be. Jordan managed to take a dominant position and pick some shots on Sefo, and even tried a submission attempt in the first round. But Sefo defended well and looked pretty comfortable on his back, not at all worried, like you would expect to see a kickboxer. The fight came to a close when Jordan seemed to hurt his knee in a brief exchange at the start of round two, and Sefo might have been lucky since Jordan could have repeated the same thing he did in round one in the second. We didn't get to see too much of Sefo's offense in this fight, but his defense at least we know is good, so it's a good start even if it is a weird one for Sefo. Now one thing to consider about Ray though is that he is 38 years old, so how far he can go in mixed martial arts will be dictated a lot by that age factor. He's got a ton of experience, but he's also got nothing left to really to prove in fighting. I mean, for him, I guess it's just to see if he can compete at this level. So, again, it's this whole Strikeforce show, overall, it was a very solid show, but how much did we really learn about the fighters who were main eventing this? Not too much. We saw Tim Kennedy take on a guy who could easily have beaten, and he did. We saw Daniel Cormier have a pretty decent match. We saw Ray Sefo survive and ultimately win by accident, if you will. So we didn't really get much out of this as far as, you know, seeing where any of these guys are going to go in the future. That's kind of the weird thing with these Strikeforce Challenger shows. They're typically good shows, but what do they actually tell us? What are they setting up for? This past Friday here in New York was Friday Night Fights, which is a boxing and kickboxing show. It's pretty big here in New York City. And I brought out a group of fans as well from the meetup.com/MMA in NYC group to join me for the Stack Night 14 Fights. As luck would have it, I got a chance to speak with a good friend of mine, Quentin Chung. Some of you might know him from Randy Couture's last fight, since Quentin was training his Muay Thai game, and I believe he came out with him. Quentin is a regular at the Extreme Couture gym, and I got to ask him a few questions about himself, the guys at Extreme Couture, who just fought UFC 103, and what he was even doing in New York City to begin with. So let's take a listen to that interview. All right, we're here at Friday Night Fights, and we just happened to catch Mr. Quentin Chung, who is the director of Muay Thai at the Extreme Couture Gym in Las Vegas, Nevada. Quentin, thanks for being here today. What do you think of the show so far?
Yeah, things are very good. You know, it's my first time. I mean, you know, we do some of the shows in South Africa and things, and it's nice to see quite a few people out on a Friday night, something different.
Now, tell us about your gym. A lot of people might not have seen our video before, where you have purchased the largest Muay Thai gym in all of South Africa. Tell us a little about that gym and what's going on there right now.
Well, at the moment, you know, my brother and my partner, Lester Lombard, they're running it because I've been fortunate. I'm living in Vegas at the moment, training Randy for his fights and also hitting the Muay Thai there. But we're doing a lot. We're getting this African team ready for the World Amateur Championship under IFMA, which I'm on an executive board and also the president of Muay Thai South Africa. And, Joe, no, we're doing a lot of, tomorrow we're actually doing a lifestyle show, which is one of the biggest in South Africa. So it's been good, you know, it's still pumping the awareness.
So you guys are getting around. You mentioned you're going to be taking over now full-time at Extreme Couture, is that correct?
That's correct.
All right, now, you were just coaching some guys, I guess, for the previous show we had at UFC 103. There were a lot of Extreme Couture guys in there. Let's talk a little about some of those fights that went down. I know Frank Trigg had a disappointing knockout loss, unfortunately, to Josh Koscheck, and I know you've been working a lot with him. He said in our interview that he had some of the most improved skills in Muay Thai. What do you think went wrong in that fight for him?
You know, this is the fight game. I mean, with Frank, I mean, he changed. He did very well. But, of course, going to the fight, I think he sort of went over into his bad habits. Now, of course, I'm sure Koscheck was actually waiting for him. We wanted to, you know, for Frank to hold back a bit. But, you know, it's a fight game, and we'll hope he bounces back out of it, you know.
Is Frank officially cut, or is he still with the UFC? Have you heard any news?
I mean, not anything 100% yet, so I don't want to say anything. But I mean, I wish, you know, everything goes well for Frank. He's a great guy, and like I said, I wish the fans could have seen more, and it's one of those things.
It's good to see him back for sure. Now, also on the card, we had Martin Campman, who was taking on Paul Daly. And that was a strange ending to the fight. I know you're not a fan of that ending either, where Campman was first on his feet, not out, and the fight was stopped. I mean, what do you think about that ending to that fight to begin with?
Well, you know, also being as a fighter, I mean, it's... if you see Martin's previous fights, he's had, I think, two fights where he's actually, like, you think he was losing, he came back winning both of them. And he did say to the ref in the back, he said, if it stops, don't stop it if it's standing up and stuff, and exactly what happened. He got rocked, you know, I mean, but, I mean, on that level, that's why it's called MMA. You know, and he's very good on the ground. One thing was Martin, and I said to Randy, amazing, on the ground, he's improved. I mean, coming from Denmark, and compared to stand-up, he's amazing.
Now, were you helping Randy prepare for his match against Nogueira?
Yes, yeah. Randy actually flew me down to train him for the fight. And like I said, you know, he did, I mean, he's one of the specimens in the world as an athlete. And pretty the way the fight went, you know, he was in good shape, and he sort of went locked and he got caught, but, I mean, look, Nogueira's not the best submission anymore. I mean, Randy stood up both. And the nice thing was what this fight showed people, it's not about that age anymore. And personally, being with Randy and spending a lot of time with him, I think this fight gave him the edge to know what he can and what he can't do. Because he hasn't fought for a year, and with a lot of things happening in his personal life, which has been settled now. So he's, Brandon Vera, the 14th of November, we're going to go be in camp next Wednesday. So that's going to be exciting.
Do you have any plans for what you're going to be doing in the camp with Randy yet?
Well, for me, I mean, look at Brandon Vera. I think, I mean, it's the main thing is, you know, he's become a good Muay Thai stand-up. And, of course, he's also good on the ground. As, you know, he's been with Randy in the team, I think, was trialing for the Olympics, I think. So they wrestled together. But I think for me, when I keep a distance, work on his blocks, make sure and try and cut him off into the cage, of course. But of course, trying to not play, put him up his game plan and take him down, I think then Randy's going to smash him.
So what would the key weakness be in Brandon Vera's game plan? Since you mentioned he is very well-rounded, but it seems that maybe some things are lacking here and there. What's the main thing you guys are going to try and exploit in this fight?
Well, like any of the fights, if you look at like GSP, you look at Anderson Silva, is to not let him control the fight. And I think a lot of the guys in his sport, that's just got into him. I mean, Christoph had him so many times in the cage. I mean, was Randy, I think Randy would have taken him. And of course, I don't think Brandon had that so much experience on the ground, though he's good for someone to like sort of ground and pound on that level, I think. So those are, I think, one of the weaknesses I see. But you never know. And I think because of Randy being caught, he's going to try and gun that. He's going to try and keep him with his long distance and arms. And he's quite good, but like Randy's, you know, he's still with better guys than that. But like I said, the level has changed. Brandon Vera's got nothing to lose, but he's got all to gain, you know. And for me, and my heart goes, and I think we'll take this one, you know. Not to predict, but knowing what Randy's been through, I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that match. Now, also, UFC 104 is coming up October 24th. That's going to be Machida versus Shogun, two world-class strikers. Now, as a world-class striker yourself, what's your take on the outcome of this fight?
Well, I'm sure Shogun's going to try and knock him out. I mean, he's done some amazing things. I mean, watching him in Pride and the UFC. But I think Machida, it's going to be interesting. You know, because we haven't really seen Machida as Randy, so we've never really seen him on the ground, you know, too much. So that's going to be interesting, where Shogun can do both. And he has knockout power. So I'm sure if he's clever enough, he's going to study the tapes and he's going to angle him up, and when he comes in, you know how Machida is good. As he gets, he comes in with his punches, and I think it's going to be good. I think it's a very well-matched fight.
All right, now, this is your trip to New York. You're here to do a little scouting for some stuff. What's going on? I hear you're going to be working at a charity kickboxing event coming up soon. Tell us some details about that.
Well, I actually met a gentleman named Tim Kelly about 2 years ago in South Africa, and I spoke to him about Muay Thai. I do Muay Thai Against Drugs Foundation in South Africa with the Assistant King of Thailand, and funny enough, we kept in contact, and he just told me recently when I got to Vegas that he started Muay Thai. Since he got back, he's been doing Muay Thai. you know, got inspired. And he's doing a foundation called TKO Foundation, which is it's actually Tim Kelly organization. So it works out CK, and he's going to do with Justin, the gentleman's doing the promotions tonight, and it's going to be a whole charity event, like all glitz and glamour. They're going to have poker events. I mean, the auction, big stuff, all big players going to be there. So, but it's something that we need. And I think I'm here to assist him. He's going to put in boxing matches and Muay Thai matches, probably six, have entertainment. And I think that's going to be something that I'm also looking forward to. So I'll be here on the 6th of November, so don't miss that. It's going to be good, and it's for a good cause, you know.
How do we find out more information about that? Do you guys have a website for it yet?
I think it's TKO, TKOFoundation.com.
Okay, so that's TKOFoundation.com. You can check out more about that charity event. Quentin, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, Matthew. Nice to see you again. FightNerd.com.
Some other news this week, according to Fighters Only, Hickson Gracie has officially retired. The legendary jiu-jitsu master said he won't be having a farewell mixed martial arts fight anytime soon, which has been speculated on by the mixed martial arts hardcore community for ages. There will not be a farewell fight. He's decided to retire, and no amount of money will change his mind. Here's a direct quote from that article from Hickson. "It's not for money at all. That's my decision, and it was planned. I already had my competition time, and now my perspective and competitive desires are focused in another field. It's important to find the time to stop. It's not to keep forcing it. What happened is over. Now it's time to move on." You don't have to fight the confidence of a champion. You can wake up every day, look at the mirror, and say you're able. So you'll face the adversities of the day. I want to pass this theory part on that you can learn from fighting, but don't need to fight to get the confidence. I'm trying to plan a project, a way to pass this concept on. So to sum that up, what he's looking to do is do some positive work for jiu-jitsu and to make people realize the value of martial arts and to benefit communities. So what does this mean exactly for modern BJJ? Not much, really. I mean, Hickson was always enigmatic and fought in a time when not many people really knew even what MMA was, and he got out of the fight game professionally really more than a decade ago, when fighters were just beginning to catch up. So we would never know how Hickson could do against today's fighters. I'm sure he's good at what he does, but his age would have definitely caught up with him by now, and his striking skills are always subpar, and especially considering the level of the athletes we have now, I mean, I don't think Hickson would probably do too well, but, you know, again, we'll never know. So, at this point, let's just remember Hickson as the legend he claimed to be in mixed martial arts, and the real legend he was in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. So, with that, we're going to take a break and head into our next interview, which is going to be with Howard Davis Jr., director of boxing at the American Top Team. So, stick around for that. We'll be right back. The Mixed Martial Arts World Expo is making its debut this October in New York City. With 80,000 square feet of exhibitors, including Everlast, Combat Sports, Zebra Mats, Throwdown, Knockout Athletics, and many more, plus seminars, panels, and demonstrations by some of the top names in mixed martial arts and competitive martial arts, including Judo Olympians Jimmy Pedro and Roddy Ferguson, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Wizards Marcelo Garcia and Vitor Shaolin Ribeiro, Olympic gold medalist and ATT boxing coach Howard Davis, and Muay Thai trainer to MMA's top stars Phil Nurse, this is not going to be a show you want to miss. Small businesses can network with the big guns, and East Coast fans can get an inside look at the sport and the people within it. The Mixed Martial Arts World Expo is October 24th and 25th at the Jacob Javits Center in New York City. Tickets are just $20. Head over to MMAWorldExpo.com and register today. The MMA World Expo, New York City's first Mixed Martial Arts Expo. Don't miss it. And we're back on Fight Nerd Radio. Joining me now, we have the honor of speaking with an Olympic gold medalist, as well as the current boxing director at the American Top Team. That would be Mr. Howard Davis Jr. Howard, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure, Matthew.
Now, we have you on the show today because you're actually going to be coming to New York for the World Mixed Martial Arts Expo. It's going to be October 24th and 25th. And you are actually a Long Islander. Where'd you grow up in Long Island?
I grew up in Glen Cove, Long Island. And it was a very small town. It's one of those kind of towns, if you blink your eye, you'll miss the town.
Okay, I'm from Bayside, Queens, so we're not too far from each other.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, you're right. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so, if you're gonna be heading, heading to Long Island when you get to New York to do anything?
Yeah, I got a lot of relatives in New York, so in Long Island, Glen Cove, so I'll be stopping by to see some of my relatives.
Are there any places you might be stopping by for sure to get maybe like a slice of good New York pizza or anything like that?
Well, we don't have what you would call great pizza in Glen Cove, not that I know of. I don't remember any great pizza places in Glen Cove. But New York City has some of the best pizza in the world.
All right, well,
before I go to Long Island,
Hey, come up to Bayside. I'll get you a good slice somewhere.
Really?
You got it, yeah.
I love pizza. Once I eat it, I can't stop eating that pizza.
Is that your big cheat food when you were fighting?
Yeah, it was, you know, it was strange. Right after a fight, you know, I would sacrifice so much. But after a fight, I had a craving for apple pie, vanilla, a la mode. That's the one thing I always had directly after a fight.
Now, what actually got you into boxing initially?
Well, actually, my father used to run a gymnasium in Glen Cove, and he had something like 12 Boom Club champions. And I was never really interested in boxing. I was always, you know, playing music. I was in a band from 12 years old up until 15. And the band broke up when I was 15 years old. And my father one day asked me, do I want to go to the movies? And for some strange reason, I didn't ask him what movie we were going to see. He didn't really tell me. But it was a biographical movie about Muhammad Ali called AKA, which means also known as Cassius Clay. And the movie came out in 1971. It came out in very few selected theaters at that time. And it was a biographical movie about Ali's life. And at the time, I don't think he had his first fight yet against Jerry Quarry in 1971. And so it was great anticipation up until Ali had his first fight from the exile, 3.5 years. So as I was watching the movie, I really got it amped up. And I told my father on the way home, I said, look, I want to be a boxer. But the very next morning, I got up at like 4:30 in the morning, I ran 3 miles, and I ran to school, and then I ran home from school, went down to the gym, and that was my track. I started boxing at the age of 15, and then when I got to the Olympics, I was 20 years old. I accumulated 125 amateur fights in 5 years.
Do you remember who your first opponent was?
Actually, my first amateur fight I lost, believe it or not. And I didn't lose another amateur fight until almost 70 fights later.
Big leap, all right. Now tell us about your experience in the 1976 Olympics, because your mother had died a week before the event. Mentally, how do you get past that to go on to win a gold medal?
Well, you know, it's two things that can happen mentally and emotionally. Either you say, you know, I'm not going to do this, or you can say, I'm going to do this and then have a purpose behind it. I said I was going to do it, but I had two purposes behind it. You know, initially it was to win it for country, yourself, family, and friends. Then when my mother passed away, everything else was secondary. I put everything to the side, and my mother's last words was, good luck, and you better bring home that gold, with a smile on her face. So that was imprinted in my mind. It resonated, and I stayed, and my whole purpose was to win it for her, and nothing else.
And the rest, of course, is history, as they say.
Yeah, I guess so.
You were boxing professionally till you were about 40 years old, and you know, that's something a lot of fighters don't usually do. A lot of them will stop at a much younger age. They'll retire early on. You kept fighting up till 40. What do you attribute to people going on?
I retired for 5 years.
5 years, okay.
I retired for 5 years, and I retired in 88. And I came back in 94. And I retired 2 years later after five fights. I retired in 96. And worked on Wall Street as a stockbroker for 2 years. I was a correction officer for about 5 years. Was a computer technician for about a year and a half. And then I get a call to be a director of boxing down here and help train the mixed martial arts artists and for America's Top Team to get their stand-up together. And I guess, as they say, the rest is history when it comes to that. I've been here for 6 years. Love it. Love the weather. Love the people. And love what I'm doing.
So what actually was it then exactly that really got you out of that brief retirement time?
It's strange. I have to walk. This is kind of funny. I have to walk past the mirror one day, and I looked at my gut. And I said, man, you gained a lot of weight. and I did, you know, really wonderful with the high-ranking sparring partner. So I called my my trainer in. He didn't know I had lost all this weight. He didn't know I was training. He came in the gym. He took a look at me and said, "Wow, what do you want to do?" I said, "Well, that's why I had you come here. If you think I still have it, let's proceed on." He said, "Man, you got more than what you have. You haven't lost a step. So let's make a comeback." So I had five fights. I lost my last fight to Dana Rosenblatt, and I retired after that.
And who was your toughest opponent inside the ring? Definitely sounds like it. Now,
yeah.
What are your thoughts on the professional boxing world today? There's a lot of talk today about how mixed martial arts is kind of pushing out boxing. Do you think that there's going to be a place for both these?
Pushing out boxing. I don't know why people always say that. Most mixed martial arts fans are not boxing fans. Most boxing fans are not mixed martial arts fans. So it's definitely two separate genres, if you will. And the sport does have elements of boxing in it, but for the most part, they're really two different sports. And I'll give you an example, and you're going to agree with me. I remember seeing Dana White, and I can't think of his name, his promoter that was on TV. They were on ESPN, and both of them were arguing about boxing versus MMA. And I said, I wish I was in that conversation where I could say that mixed martial arts is totally different than boxing. And the fans are different. And you're going to agree with me after I finish telling you what I'm getting ready to say. Can a boxer choke out? of it is on the ground. Only 15% of the guys strike. So you tell me if it's the same.
So they're basically going to both always coexist, is what you're pretty much getting at.
Well, the thing is, a lot of people compare it. And the only similar part about MMA compared to boxing is the striking. But the striking is so little in the MMA. Don't get me wrong. I think in the next 3 years, it's probably going to be one of the most prominent things in mixed martial arts. I believe that because, you know, everybody still loves to see the knockout. And when Chuck Liddell was knocking everybody out, and he made the UFC, he's the one that put it on the map. Not because of his mixed martial arts ability, it was because of his striking ability. That's why he was getting paid the big money, because he was knocking everybody out. So, those are the similarities. Very few.
Mm-hmm.
I always say slim and none went home.
Okay. Now, were you a fan of mixed martial arts before you got involved working with the American Top Team?
Yeah, I sure was. I remember the embryo stages of mixed martial arts when it was on cable and where anything went. That didn't even have a weight class. I remember watching it. I thought it was exciting. I thought it was different. You know? I thought it was, you know, more like street fighting. So you got the bird's eye view of what street fighting could be, what it could look like, you know?
Yep.
And not much really organization in terms of rules and, you know, so once the UFC was brought out by the Zephyr Brothers, they hired Dana White, he straightened it out, and it is what it is today, thanks to him.
Definitely, there have been some very big changes in the course of 15 years since the UFC has started. Now, who's currently under your wing at the American Top Team that you train?
Well, I'm not the only guy that trained the fighters here, so I want to make that very clear. I don't want to take anything away from all the great trainers that we have here. We have 17 black belt, ranging from mixed martial arts to wrestling to kickboxing, Muay Thai, and of course, boxing. So we got a tremendous amount of talent. And most of our trainers are from around the world. So I just don't want to just put everything on me or take the credit for some of the great training that we have here. I'm one of the guys, one of the good trainers that we have here. But I do teach striking. And we have some other guys that teach striking too. But I'm the most well-known, put it that way.
All right. So who are some of the guys that you and your team work with on a daily basis?
Well, Mike Brown, who's a WEC champion. Thiago Alves. Yep. Bigfoot.
Antonio Silva.
God, if I slipped, if I'm missing anybody's name, I really don't. Wilson Gouveia. Jorge Santiago, Dennis Kane, who just got back here last week. So yeah, we got a tremendous talent pool here.
Very deep talent pool.
And we got some up and coming guys that you're going to hear about within the next year. Just really unbelievable talent here. And the guys that you haven't even heard of, you know. When they really finally get into the UFC or some of the organizations, you're going to be amazed, you know? But they're learning from all these guys, from Mike Brown. They learn from Thiago Alves, the George Santiago, Bigfoot. You know, we just got an amazing bunch of guys there. Amazing bunch of teachers in Laborio, you know, Ricardo Laborio, Conan Sevilla. You know, it's just amazing here. It really is amazing to me just to watch some of these guys do what they do. It's amazing to me, you know? I enjoy coming here every day. I haven't taken a vacation since I've been here. I've been here for 6 years. I just really love, can't wait to get here in the morning. Don't get me wrong, there's some days I'm very tired, but I'm excited to be here every single day. There's always something new.
Now, was it difficult for you to transition your boxing game into a mixed martial arts mindset?
In the beginning, it was. But I think I made a smooth transition. It really took a couple of years for me to really understand the game, you know? And I used to get really bored when they went to the ground. Oh, my God, why don't the referee stand them up, you know? But now that I kind of have an understanding what the groundwork is, I enjoy it when I go to the ground, you know? Because I think I have a better understanding what they're doing. It's like if I didn't understand Italian, and I went to go see an Italian movie, and I have to look at the subtitles under it, I wouldn't be as into the movie because I really don't understand the mores and the inflections of what the language has to offer. But if I spoke the language and understand the inflections and stuff, I can better enjoy the movie. Well, it's the same thing with mixed martial arts when I first came here. I just didn't understand the groundwork. So I didn't know what a person was trying to do when he was trying to get an armbar or a rear naked choke. Now I see somebody trying to set it up. So, he's trying to set up a rear naked choke. Or he's trying to set up an armbar. Or he's trying to do this or that. So, because I do have an understanding of what the groundwork is, I enjoy it even more now than I did before.
So, do you ever get on the mats and do any jiu-jitsu with some of the guys there?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
That's funny to me. Sometimes, they'll show me something, but for the most part, I don't want to get my arm, knocked out of place or have mine or choked out. I don't even want to come close to that.
Sounds like a smart thing to do. Now, whose hands have improved the most since you first came to American Top Team?
I would have to say Thiago Alves, bar none. And when he first came here, he really got his stand-up game. Even if he turned pro as a boxer himself, he would do it extremely well. His defense is good. His jab is good. His right hand is good. He has incredible counterpunching ability. Another one is Dean Thomas. Matter of fact, I got Dean Thomas 2 professional fights as a boxer, and he did extremely well. I call him the ghost because nobody can ever hit him. Even Mike Brown.
So a lot of big changes.
Mike Brown has improved tremendously. I'm very proud of these guys, yeah.
Sounds like they definitely come a long way since you got there.
Yeah.
Now, can a fighter be taught to have knockout power, or is that something that's entirely different?
I think you can improve on power, but there's some guys that are gifted at talking their body a certain way where they can get power. And I just think that's a gift. That's just a gift.
Now, do you think there's anything lacking in today's mixed martial artists' striking abilities as far as boxing abilities go? What's missing to you?
Well, there's a lot of things missing. The most difficult person to train when it comes to striking is the wrestler. And I tell you the reason why. I was training somebody today who I've never trained before, who's been here for, I guess, about 6-7 months, and he asked me today to train him. And the first thing he had to do was try to set his feet. And he's used to wrestling where their right foot is more forward, or sometimes the wrestler may be right-handed, and they may talk their right-hand right foot first. Now, to tell somebody that who's been have his right foot out there first all the time to convert them, to put their left foot out first, it becomes quite difficult. So sometimes, if a guy is very comfortable at fighting southpaw, even though he's right-handed, I'll leave him that way, if he's comfortable doing that. But for the most part, it's very difficult. Very difficult.
All right. Who would you say is the best pure striker right now in mixed martial arts?
Pure striker? Oh, I would have to say the purest striker I've ever seen in mixed martial arts, it definitely have to be Dean Thomas. When it comes to striking. Now, when you talk about overall striking, it has to go, in my opinion, to two people. That's GSP and Thiago Alves, who know how to put their kicking and striking together, overall. But just pure striking, period, Dean Thomas, to me, is the best striker out there.
All right. Now, as a fellow New Yorker, mixed martial arts is still not 100% legalized here. What do you think it's going to take to finally get it all set in New York leagues for having some UFC shows here?
I think it's education, like anything else. If I was to go to another country and everybody ate squirrel in that country, and I come from another country, and that's all they have is squirrel, somebody has to educate me on this because of me eating squirrel, you know? So I think it's probably a bad example, but that's one thing I can think of at the time. I think education, I think most of the guys that are hired as boxing commissions in New York are pure boxing commissions. Came from boxing or really love boxing, that's all I can think about. They would look at mixed martial arts as something barbaric or something nowhere near as good as boxing. So I think these guys just have to be educated on the sport. And some of them are just pretty stirring about boxing, so they don't want to go near mixed martial arts. But it'll eventually change.
Yeah, we're hoping so. I
truly believe that.
I hope so, too. I mean, and of course, we have the Mixed Martial Arts World Expo October 24th, 25th here in New York City. That's going to be really, a big push to help get these people to see what mixed martial arts is really about. And you are going to be doing some demonstrations there, right?
Who is the new commissioner in New York right now?
Who is it? I'm trying to remember who's on the board right now. I know Bob Riley is pretty much the guy who's been pushing against it. We have Melvina Latham that's pushing for it, but I couldn't really give you an exact name at the moment off the top of my head. But we still have a pretty old, more or less a boxing commission still involved in mixed martial arts trying to get it pushed through. That's the problem.
Yeah,
right?
A lot of our old school advocates,
Very, yeah. When I was actually at the first meeting they had discussing the rules and everything about, over a year ago, and they were watching YouTube and looking at videos of things that weren't even mixed martial arts and saying, this is what it is. Watching street fights and saying, this is what's going to be put on a show in Madison Square Garden. So, it's a very backwards commission still, so education is definitely a big thing.
These guys are just old school, trust me. When somebody compares it to boxing, which nobody should, and this is what happens when somebody compares it to boxing. And that's what the commissioners do. Or this is what somebody say to them. Hey, they're trying to take over boxing, or they compare it to boxing, and they just think that this is not boxing, this is barbaric. So when you compare the two sports, with these old school guys, this happens. They just have to be educated on it. It's not that they don't want to do it. They think that it's something totally different. It's not boxing. And when people compare it to boxing, there lies the problem. And you shouldn't compare it to boxing. It's not boxing. The only thing that comes close to boxing, is the striking. There's very little striking in mixed martial arts. Most of it's on the ground. So, I just hate when people compare it. There's some elements, and that's it.
Yeah, and hopefully we can start educating these people. And one big step we're making in New York is having the Mixed Martial Arts World Expo, October 24th, 25th, here in New York. And you're going to be doing a demonstration at the show, correct?
Yes. Can't wait. I'm looking forward to that.
What are you going to be showing the New Yorkers when you come down here?
Well, we're going to show them how to, throw a proper jab, throw a good right hand, a hook, how to block punches. How to avoid takedowns, and basically just how to strike.
So fundamentals of striking?
Yes.
All right, so who are you going to bring with you to do little demonstrations? Anybody we should know about?
No, nobody you know about. It's just somebody that assists me.
All right.
Yeah.
Anything else you're looking forward to when you come into New York?
I was in New York actually about 3 months ago. I'm there pretty often, so it's not. It's always good to go back, of course. But I really love Florida. I love the weather, and I just don't want to deal with the cold weather anymore. But I still love New York, especially in the fall.
Yeah, right now it's the best time to be here.
Yeah, man.
All right, well, Howard, how can we find out more information about you?
is, you can go on the American Top Team website, which is www.americantopteam.com, or you can go on my website, howarddavisjr.com. I'm also putting on a show, a mixed martial arts show, in December, and the name of my company is fighttimepromotions.com. You can go on the website and check out what we're doing in terms of putting on our show December 12th, which I'm very excited about. And that's basically it.
All right, so Howard Davis Jr. and FightTimePromotions.com. Check out those websites for more information. Howard, thanks for being here today. I really appreciate the time.
Matthew, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by the MMA World Expo. Coming October 24th and 25th to the Jacob Javits Center in New York City, check out MMAWorldExpo.com. And by Hoodlum Fight Gear. Fight gear made by fighters for fighters. Check them out at hoodlumfightgear.com. And find MMAGym.com, your online directory for finding the best mixed martial arts gyms all around the United States. Find MMAGym.com. And we are back on Fight Nerd Radio, and you just heard from Howard Davis Jr. from the American Top Team. You can catch him at the Mixed Martial Arts World Expo this October 24th and 25th in New York City at the Javits Center. So make sure you don't miss that. Now we're going to wrap up for this week. Next week on the show, you'll hear from Dan the Beast Severn. Yes, that's right. The Beast is making an appearance on Fight Nerd Radio, and it's going to be an explosive interview that you don't want to miss. Dan has a lot to say. Even I was surprised at some of the things he had to say. So you definitely want to hear this one. It's going to be very interesting to hear from this veteran who has seen so much over the years and has a lot to say. It seems like he was just waiting for this kind of platform to speak about it. So definitely come back here next week to see that. And also, make sure you come back to see the Ultimate Fighter blog, Tough Times, with Zach Jensen and Justin Wren, as well as any other features we got coming up this week, including some more exclusive interviews and some really cool videos. So, I am the Fighter. Thanks for listening. We will see you back here next week.